These things are unsaid. I honestly don't think I ever fully said this on a podcast. You really are touching on the parts that people, I think, need to really understand and empower their own careers.
Linda, welcome to Money Bites. We are a community and platform for women in tech, empowering ourselves to become richer and improve our careers at the same time. And super excited to hear your journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. So we have three intro questions that we normally ask. The first one is a one-liner intro of yourself. The second is a trivia about yourself. And then I'll ask you the third after you answer the first two.
My name is Linda. I am a developer advocate at AWS currently. I am also a tech content creator, and I have been documenting my journey since the beginning of my tech career, really to connect with more women in technology and the community. I'm also a mom of two with a third on the way. I'm currently 7 months pregnant. I think community is kind of the key to everything throughout my journey, especially for me, like using digital platforms to do that. And it kind of ties in now with my role, but previously I was behind the scenes in a technical role. And we'll get into that.
I love it. I love it. First of all, congrats on your third. It seems quite a feat. I don't know how working mothers do it. So like super, super respect. Really excited to talk more about the content creation part, maybe towards the latter half of our talk. You already answered our first resident question. So second, what is a trivia that people might not know about you?
So I am an open book, but maybe the fact that I worked in TV production for 3 years and I was a philosophy major. I talk about having an untraditional journey into tech. I was a wedding singer for 10 years since I was a teenager.
Oh, wow.
And I was in TV production prior to ever shifting into tech, and I never took a computer science class.
I am definitely going to dig deeper into all of the above that you just mentioned. But it also sounds, the wedding singer part, that was related to your first memory of money.
Yes. So I actually come from a musical family. That was the bread on our table, right? My dad's a singer. He sings in 16 languages. So we would travel a lot with him. And I was really kind of exposed to that since a very young age. From a money standpoint, I saw the ups and downs of artists. It's not like a corporate type job. It's a very different kind of industry. A lot of people want to be in it. There's a roller coaster of that. I had a wonderful childhood, thankfully, but I do think like I didn't want certain things for myself. Mm-hmm. Also, I was very cognizant that my dad is a man and I'm a woman. A woman in music is different, in my opinion, than a man in music. I love music. I didn't love the industry. Mm-hmm. I will continue doing music. I think it's something I will never stop doing. But the same goes for anything with also entertainment. I think I saw this also aligned with TV, where women get booted out very early. It's a reality of challenges we face that is different than men. You'll see a 70-year-old man anchoring. You won't see that many 70-year-old women.
I really appreciate your honesty here. Music played a prolonged impact in your life. One, you continued it as a hustle, even through your first foray into career as a TV producer, music to TV.
Yep.
Second, you mentioned you really garnered your stage presence. You sort of bring the what you learned and the enthusiasm and the mannerism into content creation. So definitely something to think through in our later talking topics. I also am curious, you really enjoy TV production in terms of it fit with your personality, etc. But the point when you went from TV production to into tech was when you realized a similarity between the music industry and the TV industry, that there were some unspoken hurdles as a woman on what sort of pushed you into realizing you need to have a skill of your own that you can
learn. That's not reliant on a corporation or anybody else.
Yeah. Can you speak more about that?
Absolutely. And I think it's a twofold, right? My message is not to not do those things, right? We need women in music and in TV production. But I think it's also a balance of both, where it's like, for me, what I realize is one, there's these challenges. And two, I want a family and many other things early on. And from a financial standpoint, I don't see the upside that I could have balancing all of that with these kind of hurdles that rely on how, in a way, someone looks on set. Sure. I'm again hoping we've come farther in 2023 than we were at that point. I think I realized also in general, like I was going to go to law school, and the decision of not doing TV production or music or law school was that I really wanted to have a skill set that if tomorrow I lost my job, I could easily freelance on, that's not reliant on any of these things. I don't know if it's some sort of like trauma or something. I don't know what it was that like, it was so important at that point for me, but I think I just, it was a culmination of seeing certain things and being like, I want to control my destiny. I want it to be based on what I do, and I want to have a big upside for it and be able to also build a family early on. And I really didn't want to be reliant on people who might not have the best interests or intentions in mind for me. The success aspect is also the freedom of choice of when I want to be on camera, when I want to be performing, when I want to be behind the scenes, when I want to be intellectually more deep, where I don't have to show up at 3 a.m. for a consistent show every day. And then that has the financial upside and something that really I enjoy doing that helps and brings people together. Now, music has that, but I felt like the industry just has a lot of issues.
I can, in a way, relate to this because as a product manager and until now more of a generalist, I've had some hesitations in my experience because I don't have the hard skills. It's more of the soft skills that I bring, which is why I'm trying to go more into AI and, you know, give myself a bit more of a niche. But I'd love to ask, was it the hard skills that you thought would give you that edge?
I think it's, for me, always the happiness of combination of both. I think soft skills are key. I think they're so crucial. I think I had those and I wanted to give myself the hard skills that give me the padding to be able to use my soft skills in a way that's also unique because there's less people with the combination.
I also really respected how you went about this process because instead of, you know, just saying, oh, coding, which I have no experience in, looks interesting, I'm going to dive right into it. You took very strategic steps. You went to, I guess, your IT department, and then specifically asked, what do you need? And then started your journey there.
I graduated college, philosophy major, said, I will go to law school. During the time I'm going to study for my LSATs, I will work in TV production. I was interning in TV before and landed a job right after. It was great for the 2 years, 3 years, you know, that I kind of was doing that from like a exposure standpoint. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about like the industry. It wasn't something that I was going to do for the long term. And as I was going through like speaking to a lot of lawyers, they just seemed unhappy to me. I'm not saying that lawyers are not happy in general. There are people who are made for it. I also, it was kind of the same thing where I saw that you have to be part of like a firm for a while, like having that independence between that and the contrast of TV production. I just felt like maybe it's not the route for me. And then I realized when you do work in TV, you do a lot of random tasks. And one of them was building a website for a anchor's book. And I had to put some custom code. And that was the first time I was ever exposed to anything computer science. I did not have a required class in college, never got exposed to it. And at that point, it was like, ooh, this is so fun. And if you think about philosophy has like a logic part to it, very big one. It kind of was like my favorite part about being a philosophy major, and it really aligned. Then I self-studied for a year while I was working in TV production and realized landing the first job is the hardest part. I knew I wanted to go into tech, and that year, that circle of the unknown of like figuring out, okay, I want to do this. Where do I start? I kind of was very strategic about how I decided to do it. I was like, you know what? I need to get my foot in the door. And from there, I could always switch roles. The question is, what do I have now that's transferable that will give me an edge in an interview without years of experience coding, but that I could bring to the table? And as I was kind of researching, I at first thought I would go into mobile development. I was like, okay, I really think that's cool. But when I worked in TV production, so I already was working somewhere or like had some sort of transferable skills of experience where I understood the user. And if I were to build technical products for this user, it would be great if I could work in a digital team that does that because I bring something to the table, right? I decided to research internally and I went to HR and I was asking them who the managers of the digital teams were. I ended up getting connected with them. And when I asked them, you know, hey, I would like some advice. I always ask for more advice. I never try to put the pressure on them and then build those connections proactively. What I realized is at the time, all the mobile developers were more agencies. And what they were really looking for was JavaScript developers. So what I ended up doing was like pretty much saying, hey, I see there are two open roles for JavaScript developers. I'm planning on quitting my job and going to coding bootcamp. And I would love the opportunity, just the opportunity to apply. I would love to, like, with zero pressure for you, learn what you would need for this role. They kind of connect me to the team. So I shadowed a bit and I saw what I needed to do to land this job. Did I know I'm for sure going to get this job? No. But what's the downside to that? I realized most of the jobs we were looking for at the time were JavaScript developers in corporate. That would be where I would probably find my first job. And so doing market research in the area with the network you have and looking at your transferable skills, it was a good sell for them because they knew I was using these tools that I would be building because I was using them as a producer. Building, you know, different things in that landscape was not just coding, but there was like a soft skill aspect, as you were mentioning. Yes, I'm not maybe not at this level of coding yet, but have a passion for the product and people like to see that, right? It's preferred that you actually are passionate about what you're building.
I just find that so smart in how you went about this. But if we also look at your net worth graph, you were starting from a negative, I'm assuming from student debt, et cetera.
So TV production doesn't pay well.
Yeah.
It was like $13 an hour, $12 an hour at that time in New York City. And walking in at 3 a.m. and having 18-hour days. And the raise was like a dollar.
At that financial stage, what gave you the conviction to say, I am going to take on, I don't know if it was more debt or savings like that, to take that plunge?
Yeah. Well, if I looked at the contrast, it was, for me, going to law school would be a big debt also. Here, it was 3 to 4 months. A skill set where I didn't see the downside. So I took like a 15K loan. Plus I was going to not make income during that time. I actually didn't take wedding gigs as well. Because for me to do this, I needed to be fully focused. For me, I knew that if I want this to be a quick switch, I need to do it in an intense way. That's a boot camp that I do nothing else. I also went to a full-time in-person because I like people and I learn better with people. So knowing how you learn is important. At the time, I went to the Flatiron School, but I actually did a lot of pre-work before to make the most out of that boot camp. So while I was still working in TV production, I was trying to teach myself a lot. And I went to a lot of meetups in New York City for free and a lot of free resources just to like be able to then make the most of that time to show the things that I cannot do as much online, like more the group projects, the interactivity, the things that then I had more questions on that I just learned faster and building and the deadlines. I need deadlines. A lot of people need deadlines. It's not a bad thing. Like I think people need like a good like, here's when you have to do this by, because it's hard. Life has a lot of things coming at you. If you look at the opportunity cost there, like the worst case scenario is that this skill would be useful to me somehow. And I believed it would be way more worth it than the 15K loan plus the time that I did not work. And I also knew that this is the time for me to do this before starting to have kids. The ability for me to balance that and quit maybe at that point would be even harder because the opportunity cost there falls on other people. For me, I didn't want to also completely burn out.
For sure. For sure. I really appreciate how you're transparent about how important and a priority your family was throughout your career decisions. Do you feel that with all of that said, you took this risk, you took the boot camp, you went to the meetups, had these group projects, was that enough to land you that role at Fox?
Yes, it was like enough because I was kind of strategic with what I decided to do in a way that I could market in a resume. And then I did do work post the bootcamp to prepare for the interviews. I didn't just interview at Fox. I did interview at other places as well, just to experience that. There's the bootcamp part where you're learning certain things, but then the interview prep is almost a different skill. So there was like a month and a half, 2 months in between where I was doing that. I would say overall, it was like 3 to 5 months of like not working. But in the grand scheme of like going to law school with the kind of money I would have to pay for law school. And the concept that I was able to actually just like, if things didn't work out, freelance or potentially build other things, there was something also so exciting. I was nervous, but I was also, I believed this is like, I didn't feel like there was a huge downside of having this skill set. Like even if I end up doing something else, like I could not even be in tech, but work in something that just having that skill set from a management standpoint is important.
Sounds like really sort of took the most out of your experience. I want to go back to your career satisfaction graph, though. Your graph is really akin to almost like the stock market. There are three major drops, and then overall it's going up. But you land that job, you become a web developer, your life satisfaction graph kind of plateaus at that point. But after your first child, both your career and net worth drops.
Yeah. So I think I loved my job. But the thing is, when you stay in a company for a very long time and you want to increase your salary, it definitely becomes like, depending on the company, and I feel like this happens a lot, you kind of make less than the people walking in that are new because you're not job hopping. And between that and maternity leaves and just trying to balance like two under two over that period of time, first kid and second kid, I loved my job because I felt like in some respect, the company I worked for had a lot of balance in it. I knew that if I could jump ship, but I didn't want to at that point because I felt like trying to balance new kids at that point, there were too many moving parts for me to, in my opinion, to do that without completely collapsing. So I wanted to stay in a place I knew and change my roles within the company. So I was like, okay, I'm going to increase my salary by changing roles instead of jumping to a different company. It was hard to leave also because I felt like I had a huge support system there. It's not just what you're building, it's your managers.
I actually want to piggyback off on that because you have this quote in our pre-call that I found super interesting. It's actually the managers, not the company, that matters more in your career trajectory.
Right.
And what do you think that makes a phenomenal manager?
I think leaders that lead with empathy, that really understand the humanity of their employees and don't treat them like numbers, that understand how to make them perform their best. And that's not always the same for every person. Even in a time where I was like, kind of, I had to be in the office, like they were like, work from home. Like for that point in time where I was like 8 months pregnant, you know, like they were just like, they knew they could trust me. I delivered.
But
and
you weren't willing to give you the raise.
But the raise was not always them. A lot of these companies, if they're smaller, if there's not a process for promotion, like it ends up being on the backlog. It's not that I didn't get raises, but I didn't get raises to the point that I felt was my worth. And also I realized over time that where I am, even in the company at that point, other companies just paid more. That was the scale in the company.
Mm.
Now there were things that were worth more to me than money. That was a company that a lot of people on the tech side never left. So what happens is there's a very strong working bond. There was something priceless about that. But I think like over time, you have to know when to leave. And listen, this is corporate. There's a lot of red tape when it comes to these things. There's a lot of people at fault when it comes to these things. It usually has to come also from the top as a process. When there's no checks and balances on checking on when people should get promoted and there's no real process for promotion, that is also problematic. It's mechanisms versus good intentions.
I appreciate that in a sense that I feel you're touching on something really important that we've discussed with previous guests. One, not always salary that's the most important. You have to look at the total compensation. And sometimes it's also not just the compensation, but the overall benefits.
Yeah.
But how did you find that next jump into what the good opportunity, next ladder up would be?
So I realized a few things. I knew I wanted to stay for longer in the company, but navigating raising your salary by a lot in a company that you're already in, the ball is not in your court always, right? I looked at what was needed and what was more a skill that wasn't there enough. I don't like doing the same thing for too long. I started as a junior web developer, was doing more front end, then ended up doing more like full stack API work back end. And then during that time, we were going through cloud migrations. The cloud was a different team. That part was not as visible, but I got to work a lot of big live events like Super Bowl elections, things like that. And the question was kind of like, how are these millions of people on our sites, right? And it's not crashing, right? Like, how is all this data that's coming in that day within minutes getting normalized to then give me an API with all that information? So like all those questions really aligned to cloud. I was at that point where it was like, okay, I did a lot of web development. Now it's like that next phase. I saw the banter within companies about cloud and I was kind of looking for the next thing I would specialize in. I also knew I need to, one, increase my salary. Two, I'm really curious about like, it was kind of like a mix of everything. It felt like A to Z, like I could build something A to Z in a different way. And I could do it with a click of a button on a dashboard. Between that and the talk of migrating and all these big events that had this aspect that I still didn't have a depth in, I started like kind of trying to find out more. And as I did, I also
question there, Linda.
Yeah.
One of our previous guest speakers, Alex, who is a CPO at Cerebral, made a really good quote that you need to be at the place that moves the needle for a company, which seems to be what you were doing. You found a pain point and an opportunity with cloud.
Yeah.
I'm trying to do something similar, but as my interest is going into AI, Gen AI, and all of these, one question that keeps coming back at me is, how do you know if it's something that's moving the needle for the company or if it's a new hype, like a transient hype?
It's a great question. I think with AI, it's also a very, it could look like both. Mm-hmm. However, I would say it's with AI, it's like a more visible version. Like, I think we're all upskilling in AI, but I don't see us not needing to. Like, it's a necessity. It's almost a necessity with AI, right? I don't think like AI is a hype, right? I think the way you know is like when you see dollars being invested in a company. When I was looking at cloud, I could see the excitement, but it wasn't an excitement for my manager just as like, oh, this is cool. It was, oh, we're actually enterprise customers of AWS and we're migrating all our data centers. That's a big move. And it wasn't yet in the application phase because like, but other parts of the business were already migrated. So I think kind of seeing where the investment is, or if it's a talk of investment for a company, because many times they'll invest in these things before they ever funnel into the part where you as a developer or product manager are dealing with it. At that point, there was that investment, but it wasn't like the skill everybody needed to learn yet. Now, is it too late when everybody? Absolutely not. It's similar, but it's different. I think with the cloud, it didn't have mass market hype because it's not consumer facing like type thing. I think with AI, there's a mix of both. But then there's the part where it's like enterprise. How do we make enterprise AI applications? There's issues you will deal with in an enterprise level that will not be necessarily something that maybe the consumers see or mass market sees. And I think those things are where that's a skill. Also, I think we're at a point that every role is going to adapt. It's definitely more like a revolution. Now, it's not that it didn't exist this whole time. It did. It's a combination of not just the AI, the model improvement. It's really the compute also that improved to support that. That you could go to cloud and actually get the chips, right? That could support this kind of thing. All these different like aspects actually in combination make for a time where this could actually change the industries.
I really appreciate how insightful you are in making the bets on your career. So as you were going into tech, you looked at what were the overlapping opportunities with what you already had and what the company needed. You did something again similar in cloud and you made that internal jump. Looking at Linda's career satisfaction stock market, though, after the second child, there is another huge dip. Your life satisfaction actually is pretty, it held up, but your career satisfaction took another nosedive.
Yes. So I think after my second kid, it was extremely, it's chaotic. And I had to be in the office 5 days a week. And the price of me going in every day.
Yeah.
To the caretaking that I needed to be able to go in every day.
Yeah. And at that point, you had this almost existential question. Right. What do I want to do with my life?
Yes. And every time I've had this happen, I first got very overwhelmed, right? It feels like I don't know what my next step is. But actually, that part where it might take longer to figure the next step out, it's actually the real work. Because once you know the direction you want to go with, it's like, oh, then you're looking for the roadmap, but I know what the goal is. When you don't know a goal, you're kind of not intentional about it. And that research is part of our process and part of our career process. And especially in tech, we need to do these things. So I feel like I had this a few times in my career. It happened to me right, you know, in between like this. My kids actually pushed me because in a way, if I didn't have a second kid at that point, maybe I wouldn't have moved as fast. Mm-hmm. But I needed to do this because at that point, the cost of me not financially getting the value I'm worth was too high because, you know, there were other things that were going on, like layoffs of my partner, you know, things like that. Like these things like all affect. I needed to make a move that really increases my pay and puts me on the path that I wanted. And I actually interviewed at that point when I had that dip with AWS as a solution architect, and I did not get the role. But from that, I learned where my lack of experience is in certain places. I was doing a lot with cloud, but I wasn't on a team working in cloud. Based on that interview, it was such a good experience because I realized where I have gaps of knowledge. I was already making a lot of things that were kind of like already related to cloud. Like I started AWS certification training internally. And because of that, was connected to the AWS accounts team. And because of that, knew what projects are going on. And because of that, knew the whole team on the cloud end. And then, so when I wanted to make the shift, that interview gave me the guts to go up to that manager and say, hey, I want to work for your team.
Mm.
Like I always kind of built the trust and do the work. And guess what? They were my biggest champion in doing that because it was beneficial for both of us. They needed somebody. Yeah. But they were saying, actually, you know what, Linda, we actually need SREs. Now, would I have gone for SRE if they didn't recommend it? I was really looking for infrastructure engineering, which is kind of the same, but it's like different. And then you know what I did? See these books right here? I think one of them is an SRE one. Read that, did a workbook, learned about SRE, but on the job. And they trusted me to upskill. And it came from a background where I brought something else because the coding background is beneficial. I was able to make that shift in a place that it was worth it for them to give me that shift. And then I did that for a year and a half, 2 years. And then when I interviewed again for AWS, that was the right time.
Can we break this down a bit further? So yeah. You saw opportunities and then within networks that you have already created, you start building trust and doing work for that and basically winning additional opportunities to go in that direction. So as you're figuring out which direction to go to, are there questions, internal questions that you're asking yourself? Like, how do you choose which direction is right?
Well, I never make a decision that I'm like, I believe that like we get very paralyzed from overthinking. So a lot of how I function is when I'm trying things, I always say, let me try. And I just get deeper and because it's baby steps. So like when I started the, for example, AWS certification thing, my goal was just to network with the other teams and find like-minded people. Things lead to other things. So like when I did that, management loved it. And then I was like, let me make this weekly. Now, what happened when I made it weekly? I forced myself to upskill. I taught other people. I had to study every week to teach other people. And then what happened was they connected me with the AWS accounts team who loved this. And then the AWS accounts team was sending me people through solution architects to also speak every other week so I could do a little less of the lunch and learn every single week. And then we started building tracks and I started coordinating these tracks. And then I knew everybody and I was listening and I was interacting and I was simultaneously was talking about this online. And I was involved with the AWS community. So between that and this, it's almost like trying to get the snowball to roll.
Mm.
You have to put yourself in the right room. And that's the key. The knowing where I'm going to go exactly, I didn't. Like, did I know I would be an SRE? I couldn't even plan that. But when I needed to, and when I came out of that interview, and when I already did all these things, and I knew I wanted to go to cloud, they're like, okay, Linda, so how exactly are you going to get into cloud? How do I now shift and increase my salary and do this? And mind you, I shifted during COVID before when there was freeze, not when there was like jobs. Surrounding yourself with people of where you want to be next is very important because it almost will answer the question for you without you realizing. You don't even have to be strategic about it. You know what I'm saying? You just have to think, I have to get to the next room because knowing the tech is not really a journey that like you have, like I can't call out what the next role will be. I could tell you what direction I'm going to go and find ways to utilize what I have already. Like I am in a company. Great. People want to learn about certs. Great. Did I know that's going to lead to the next role? I knew there was no downside to it. The worst case scenario is that I am forcing myself to upskill. And it always comes from an upskilling standpoint. Like when I force myself to upskill with other people and empower other people, what ends up happening is we always end up helping each other. And that's the power of community. And that's what community is part of everything I do. I also love what I do. And it's the reason I think we all could reach bigger heights in our full potential when we do things together. And that's the whole concept of tech too. We're all building on innovation of each other, right? Otherwise, like open source, you know, the whole concept of open source, the whole concept of sharing and blogging, like the whole tech culture of like sharing information for free is because we're all building on each other and are better for it.
Linda, you're so cool.
Look who's talking. I love this. And thank you for creating a platform of places to connect with the community and to talk about these topics. Cause I think these things are unsaid. I honestly don't think I ever fully said this on a podcast or like talked about the financial aspect. I feel like this is like incredible. And you really are touching on the parts that people, I think, need to really understand and empower their own careers.
Well, you can't see right now, but I'm blushing behind my avatar. Community was something that has consistently been a strength throughout your motivation in career. After all of that work, after putting yourself in the right room with the right people, you do make that jump into AWS. Yes. I also see your net worth life satisfaction graph takes a huge spike. So what is this role that's giving you all this joy and money?
Yeah, of course. So developer advocacy is really a combination role. You know how you were talking about hard skills and soft skills? Mm-hmm. This is a role that really has both. But the beauty with developer advocacy is that I really deal with community. I'm not dealing necessarily with enterprise customers. I'm dealing with the individual developer. My job is to really advocate on behalf of developers. A big part of developer advocacy is earning trust. And you have to have had the experience to then relate to your who you're trying to advocate for, right? It came at the right time. Developer advocacy is a lot more like people facing. I personally didn't want to do that kind of job with very, very young kids at that point. With the first job I applied, do you remember when the one I didn't get, the solution architect one? With this one, they found me on social media and that's how I got my interview. So it was the right team and the right people and the right managers who believed that I would be the right fit for that role. And that changes a lot of things in your experience on a job. Kind of everything came together.
Like, I love that. This is like multi-years, multi-careers into making.
Right? Like it's like life is funny. It's like when you put, that's why, you know, when people say smile to the world and the world will smile at you. I believe in manifestation in many ways. Like I think if you put out there and you take action of things that you enjoy and is your living your truth, the right things will find you. And I wouldn't have even known about this role. Especially with the concept of having social media, we have the tool set that we didn't have in the past. Now, it comes with a price. I'm not going to say it doesn't. But using LinkedIn, using different places where you could share, you don't need to be like doing tech content creation, but we all have like platforms we could highlight certain things or put out there certain things. If you put out there something, like if you want to study something, find other people to study with that might have like-minded. It's not just about the studying for that topic. It's the other things you're going to share with each other and empower each other. Same thing goes with content creation. I could tell you before I became a developer advocate, I was doing a lot of paid collabs on the side, money transparency on paid collabs with other women in tech content creators. Huge difference. Like all these things, like building community, we all are helping each other and really also finding the people that have the same values.
One of the reasons why I reached out to you was one of your LinkedIn posts where you were rapping about AWS Cloud. And it was like so many questions, but
this is me trying to combine everything at once.
Again, I totally see how this is like multi-years in the making, everything coming together. What do you build these contents for and how do you do it?
The tech education through music was something I kind of like always deep down kind of wanted to experiment. And this is more a creative outlet, right? Like I didn't do this in any strategic way. I actually got really nervous to post it on LinkedIn. I remember I was more comfortable posting this on Instagram. And then when I posted on LinkedIn, I remember closing my eyes and just being like, okay, Linda, because I was like, you know, if I don't live my truth, this is who I am. If you don't like it, it's okay. It's almost like the same thing with content creation where like you put out things you enjoy, you will get the audience that enjoys it. If you're putting things you don't enjoy, you're going to be forced to actually cater to an audience that wants things that you don't enjoy. It's really important to actually direct that part and find your people. I was like, you know, it could seem a bit corny, but this is who I am. And also it's things that scare me. And sometimes I want to do that. It's really a creative outlet. And a lot of times if I'm like working on a lot of technical things, I think like life is interpretation. So you could look at something as boring or fun, depending on what you do with it and how you know, how many topics have been taught by boring people and people hate the topic because it's the teacher who's not actually reeling it. And the same vice versa. How many times did people love a topic because the teacher was really good? I enjoy this. I don't care if one person's watching it, zero people are watching it. Like this is something I want to do.
I think a internal dialogue that a lot of people have is there's so much content that has already been created. What can I, who sometimes feel very small, possibly provide? Are you doing anything particular to find your community, or are you just like posting it and letting the algorithm do the work?
understand that every person is unique. There's only one of you. And even though it seems like many people are on these platforms, there is room for everybody. And not only that, the issue is not information. There is a ton of information online. The issue is it's overwhelming. People want to relate to the person talking to them. People have different ways of digesting information. We need more people that are relatable to different people. Not everybody's different. And what somebody will relate to might relate to this person, might relate to this person. The way you say something, delivery is just as important as content. Mm. It's how you're delivering something, your way of delivering something, your way of asking. Look at this podcast even. The questions you're asking, the graphs. I've never done this with any other podcast. That is a unique thing. It's not just that you do something that nobody else does. It's even the small things. You being yourself, that is going to make a difference because social media is about the individual like person interpreting something. That's why brand accounts are tougher because they don't have a person. That's one person. People relate to people. People want authenticity. People are actually very sensitive to that these days. And there's room for everybody. There's room for everybody. And whoever's listening to this, if you're thinking of doing this and are hesitating because you think there's already all these people, you know what? If I would have thought like that, because it felt like that also many times, I will tell you, you'll surprise yourself. You also won't get to the point of doing things and finding yourself if you don't explore. Just start. Like, it's not about knowing on day one what's going to be the thing that it's about putting out there things and not overthinking it. Our communities are no longer just in person in the flesh.
It's a consistent theme that you've actually walked the talk on. Try rather than overthink.
Yeah. Analysis paralysis is real. That's actually the killer.
For sure. And us being women in tech, I do have to ask, did you have to go through conflicts committee to get approval for you to like post these or?
Today, my job has social media involved in it. I work on a lot of like brand accounts too and make videos for that. So now it's kind of like intertwined, the digital landscape and the concept of content creators. It's a gray area because it used to be something looked down upon for corporations and now is something that is needed. A lot of my way to do developer advocacy, because I reach a lot more people and educate people that are not near a meetup, that are in places that cannot go to, you know, in countries all over the world, why would corporations not use video?
Well, let me ask on that for a wrapping developer advocate. If you click on the day in the life link that I shared with you earlier, and we're going to create a pie chart off of this. Let's think of this sort of as a mixture of how you spend your time slash energy. It doesn't have to be a day. It could be a week or a month.
So developer advocates have a few different compartments. You have to be very adamant about blocking time and how you work. Some people could do like the videos and the technical stuff on the same day. I'm a person that needs separate days for this kind of stuff. There's a part where I put the tech hat and I am immersing myself in products, demoing. That's like the technical part. That's like very similar to me coding. And the tech part is actually my favorite kind of days because it's the days I get to build. Writing right now for me at this year would be like more at the 15%. Mainly because I'm also adjusting things based on what I'm good at. But I almost need like to do videos if I'm speaking on camera a different day. And the things that could go with that are Twitch streams, podcasts, all these other things. And I would say there's a combination of energy. A Twitch stream, for example, is technical also. And I'm live coding or live building. That is a very high energy level. Like it is draining. I love it. It's incredible, but it's live. Anything live, like speaking or Twitch, is probably like energy-wise, very high. Video creation itself, I could do a lot of times. So when I say video creation, I'm not just creating the videos, I'm enabling others. And I work with people creating videos, talking about technical topics. I come in with both a technical and video hat on those things. And I'm making my own content.
Most people, when they look back on their careers, the dots connect. But I have never talked to someone who's like, it's like this wave of culmination of all of your experiences, passion, and
the funny part is I couldn't have even like planned this.
Yeah. What are you most excited about as our closing question in the coming 2024?
Really excited to see how we evolve with Gen AI on specific personas. I think how it's going to change DevOps engineers. or specific roles is actually really interesting and how it's going to integrate into enterprise. I mean, I feel like the pace is just, it's amazing. And it's also very exciting. I'm excited to really upskill a lot. I am excited to hone in more, experiment more with new services, just in general, see where the industry goes on that respect. I'm of course having another kid. So that's going to be part of the year. You know what I love? Every time I have another kid, usually during that time.
And you have another kid.
every time I'm on maternity leave, what ends up happening is my anxiety over my kids is way higher than work. I sit there like checking if my baby's breathing, you know. I need distraction because then I go, you know, you kind of go crazy. You know, when you're in charge of a life, it's a little different than work. For me, not having work sometimes makes me more anxious and stressed. You like things you can control in life. And when you worry about things you cannot control, I think that ties into why I went into tech. Tech specifically, there's always an answer. It's like you could get lost in this like technical issue, but there is an answer and you will find the answer. But what ends up happening is the contrast of not working and coming back to work. It's tough, but it's also, every time I've made a change in my career, I had an epiphany during that time. Mm. Because when you're far removed for a few months, you see things in a different light. It always ends up causing me to make some sort of like direction or thought process or try something. So who knows? I'm learning just like everybody else.
I love how a philosophy major utilizes mat leave for life direction and introspections. On that note, where can folks find you to see more of your raps?
My handles are all Linda Viva, and I post a lot, most of my stuff on Instagram and LinkedIn.
Thanks so much for sharing everything and being an open book.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome. I'm such a fan of yours. You are really touching on points that are so helpful to others. And I'm excited to see you continue doing that and following your journey. So
thank you.